lot of fish. It's been steady for the last 2 weeks. Just all of a sudden, it's like turning on a fire hose. Here come the fish. You know?
The Chilkoot River is finally full of sockeye, and solar conditions could be right for an out-of-season auroral light show. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Tara Bicknell. Those stories and more up next. Biologists on the Chilkoot River are relieved to see a healthy sockeye run after 3 weeks of wondering where the reds were. Rich Chapel with Fish and Game even called the surprise spike in numbers unprecedented.
Yeah, the way the run was coming in was just very weak, and the fish just weren't showing up at all.
So back on July 10th, sport fish biologists slashed the bag limit for sport fishermen by 5 fish, down to only 1 sockeye per day on the Chilkoot.
That's because the escapement trend at that time was very weak and low, and worse than the past 2 years. Now, it looked like we were not going to make the minimum escapement goal at that time. And that was with about 20% of the run usually through the weir. We thought we'd have to keep that in place for the whole season.
Subsistence fishermen were focusing on the Chilkat side, which had a stronger outlook, and commercial fisheries kept heightened restrictions in place. Then, last week, that all changed.
So they were late, but they've showed up in force.
Around the 21st, Chapel says over 1,000 fish a day were counted through the Chilkoot River weir.
Then in the last 14 days, we've gotten 41,000 fish through the weir. They just showed up like all of a sudden, and they've just been flooding through.
The trend has been similar in other parts of the state, in South Central King runs and other Southeast sockeye runs. In the Chilkoot, Chapel says the spike in numbers shows that the run might be turning out to be better than usual, a point of view they weren't talking about earlier in the season.
Yeah, we certainly were worried. Yeah, it was looking, you know, through mid-July, it was looking very weak, like we weren't going to make the escapement goal. But yeah, we're very happy that the fish have showed up, and so there's lots of opportunity to harvest some sockeye salmon.
Typically, sockeye counts begin to pick up in mid-July, peaking at the end of July.
On the timing, this year is pretty normal. I mean, we're having the peak of the run, you know, last week of July through the first week of August, and that's right on time. But just having the run be so weak at the beginning is really unusual. But as far as like the rate that the fish are coming in, they've been coming in a lot of fish per day, you know, higher than average. Yeah, kind of unprecedented the way they've just showed up.
Chapel says the escapement goal of 38,000 fish is already reached for the season, and that as of Monday, 50,000 had passed through.
But now the way the trend is looking, we're headed towards the upper end of the escapement goal, so we're having a good, healthy escapement into the Chilkoot River this year.
Over 1,000 fish a day have been steadily coming through the weir for the last couple weeks, with the highest count coming in at 7,300 in one day.
That's a lot of fish. It's been steady for the last 2 weeks. Just all of a sudden, it's like turning on a fire hose. And here come the fish, you know.
And that's good news for the fishermen who favor the Chilkoot. They'll be able to bring home as many as 6 sockeye salmon a day through the rest of the season.
The escapement goal is 38,000 to 76,000 fish. So, yeah, we have the escapement goal in the bag, and there's no reason to have any harvest reductions for the rest of the year.
Some changes to commercial fisheries management have also been made as a result of the strong run, but bag limits for species other than sockeye remain unchanged. Additionally, all streams flowing into Chilkoot Lake are still closed to sport fishing for salmon. Four Southeast communities are getting new or substantially upgraded ferry terminals in the next year or so. Some of the money is coming from the federal stimulus program. One construction project will bring regular ferry service to one town for the first time in years. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Gustavus is about 50 miles northwest of Juneau, near the mouth of Glacier Bay. Its population of 450 is larger than several communities on the Marine Highway system, but it's only had brief periods of limited ferry service. That will change sometime later this year.
What we have initially planned is to add that as a stop both directions on the Pelican Run.
Marine Highway Manager Chuck Van Kirk says a new multi-purpose dock helped along by federal stimulus money will allow passenger and vehicle service from Juneau, probably starting late fall.
They will be able to go over in the morning, leaving at 7 o'clock to Gustavus by 11:30, and then the ship continues on to Pelican and comes back through late that evening. So it pretty much gives you a better than half a day in Gustavus.
The dock, causeway, ramp, and related structures are costing about $17 million. They will also be used for freight and fuel. Service by the small ferry Leconte will be monthly, at least for the winter, though additional service may be added later. Puna, about 40 air miles west of Juneau, is also scheduled for terminal improvements. That includes about $3.8 million in waterside work.
That was for rebuilding of the marine structure there, the catwalks, the ramps, the transfer bridge, the fendering, all that sort of thing. And that was, in essence, stimulus money.
Marine Highway General Manager John Falvey says the project should go out to bid within a month and be finished by February. A separate $3.1 million uplands project has already been completed.
It consisted of a new building. The building is actually in place now. The lot's repaved, staging, curbs, gutters, sidewalk, lighting, fencing, the whole thing.
The dock work will allow fast ferries to stop in Huna, though there are no plans to do that yet. The Leconte usually serves the town. Angoon's terminal will also get a completely new ramp and float system. Van Kirk says that could happen this year or next.
We gave the contractor a one-month period this coming fall in the event that he could get everything fabricated and get the work up to the point where he could remove the old transfer system and put the new in. However, if they couldn't get that accomplished, then we gave him a second period of time, which is September of 11, to be able to complete that work.
The $6.1 million project will allow fast ferries to dock in Angoon, about 55 miles southwest of Juneau and 40 miles northeast of Sitka. Construction windows are limited by fish runs. Ferry service will be disrupted by the Angoon and Huna projects. Smaller ships on contract with the ferry system will provide fill-in service. Annette Bay near Metlakatla, about 15 miles south of Ketchikan, is also slated for a new terminal.
We will have a completely new starboard side loading facility, ramp, and there will be also a waiting shelter there. There will not be a terminal per se, and of course a parking and staging area.
Falvey says the structure will replace one closer to the city, shortening the sailing to and from Ketchikan. It should go out to bid in September and be completed by fall of 2011. The work is expected to cost about $8.1 million. The old terminal at Port Chester will be dismantled. The route will continue to be served by the small ferry Lituya. The new terminal will be able to handle other small ferries, including Inter-Island Ferry Authority ships. The Marine Highway System continues to look for a new location for the Ketchikan end of the Lituya's route.
We're still in the process of what we call recon. We, in essence, started over again when it was determined that we would not be able to purchase property in Saxman.
That terminal will further shorten Lituya's sailings. The ship now docks at Ketchikan's main ferry terminal on the other side of downtown. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
Unusual conditions in space may make the aurora borealis more visible than usual this time of year. According to the Geophysical Institute with the University of Alaska Fairbanks, Tuesday's auroral forecast for the Northern Lynn Canal is elevated to moderate and peaks at active on Wednesday and Thursday. For those watching in Skagway, Klukwan, and Haines, check the skies for the aerial light ribbons around midnight. Doug Biesecker with the Space Weather Forecasting Center in Boulder, Colorado, interviewed with PRI's The World on Tuesday.
Anytime around midnight tonight, viewers or listeners in Canada can certainly expect to see enhancements in the aurora and in Alaska. And if we're lucky, maybe some folks up in Wisconsin and Minnesota can head out and expect to see the aurora going on.
The polar light shows are triggered by explosions of magnetic energy about 80,000 miles away, and witnesses of the multicolored show are actually watching collisions between electrically charged particles from the sun that enter the Earth's atmosphere.
By space weather, what we're talking about is the effects on the Earth's magnetic field, which is this big shroud that surrounds the Earth, and changes in the Earth's magnetic field, change radiation belts, which can affect communications and GPS. It's the influence on the Earth's upper atmosphere, which is really invisible. It's the magnetic fields and particles that we can't normally see.
Biesecker says this particular storm that he's tracking should last for a few days, but cause no problems.
from this storm, we won't expect any blackouts. Airlines that are trying to fly over the poles, the quick routes from Chicago to Hong Kong, may experience some communications outages. And satellites are always at risk. But what ensures listeners around the globe can enjoy this is that not only is there one of these mass ejections, but a second one's going to hit us on August 5th. And so we're looking at a good 3 or 4 days of unsettled to active, even minor storming conditions in space.
According to the University of Alaska Fairbanks, the best time to observe the northern lights is near local midnight, when the most active formations often occur. Actually, geomagnetic midnight is the best time, but serious aurora watchers might plan to spend from 9 p.m. to 3 a.m. with their eyes to the sky. Auroral activity generally appears in waves called auroral substorms. Bursts of activity often occur within an hour or two of the last one. Seeing the northern lights is also affected by other factors like cloud cover, moonlight, and urban light pollution. So, good meteorological luck. The aurora forecast returns to low to quiet towards the end of the week for the northern panhandle. This is Tara Bicknell reporting for KHNS. Want to stay in touch with family and friends out of town? Why not send them a link to your local news at khns.org.